the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto-related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
There are people in South Africa that get paid and spend only in Bitcoin. We wondered what that was like. There are Bitcoin circular economies such as Bitcoin Ekasi down in the Western Cape, where surfing coaches are paid in Bitcoin and local shops have been convinced to accept Bitcoin and participate in these growing circular economies. So we wondered what it was like to live on Bitcoin only. We decided to ask Carol van Wyk, founder of Money Badger and one of the original founders of Luno. Getting off the fiat grid brings up a lot of questions. Can you really use Bitcoin to buy everything you need, even paying rent and municipal rates? What about taxes? What are the advantages and what are the disadvantages? Well, Carol joins us again, so let's dive in. Hi, Carol. It's good to talk to you again. How long have you been living on Bitcoin only and why did you decide to do this?
Hi, Kira. Well, I would love to say that I've been living on Bitcoin only for many years, but the fact is that I've only really been living off of Bitcoin or trying to live off Bitcoin only since about March or April this year. And the reason for this is that with this new project company called Money Badger, if you've not heard of us, our mission is to make Bitcoin money. So the idea is that you should be able to spend crypto assets as money to support your day-to-day spending, as well as any kind of luxury and, you know, special things you want to get for yourself. So for me personally, that's what the company does. And as the CEO of the company, there's this term called dog fooding. There was a dog food company in the United States many years ago where the CEO used to eat the dog food at board meetings to demonstrate how good the quality of their dog food is. So in the same spirit, I've decided to put my money where my mouth is and try to live most of my life as far as possible off of a Bitcoin standard. So what I've done is that, yes, I still pay as you earn, still get an RP5, but then I convert all of my salary, which is a startup salary, by the way. This is not a market-related salary. Convert everything into Bitcoin and take that and then try to see if I can cover all of my expenses.
In the original Bitcoin white paper by Satoshi Nakamoto, Bitcoin is conceived of as a transactional digital currency, not really as a store of wealth. It seems to be working for you. Do you encourage others to do the same?
Look, yeah, so the title of the white paper was Person-to-Person Electronic Cash, Bitcoin Peer-to-Peer Electronic Cash. So there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, the person-to-person component is important. The electronic cash component is important. And to your point, today, what we're seeing is that there's a debate between people saying Bitcoin is a store of value, in other words, an investment or a way to save money. And there's a growing, but a small but growing group of people saying, well, Bitcoin is actually money, so a medium of exchange, as you say. And that group is small, I think, for a reason. It's still kind of a niche thing. The technology is still kind of a little bit tricky. So I think if you're somebody like me, you're interested in technology, maybe you've got some software engineering background, and you believe that the internet is a way to connect society globally, and there's an opportunity to use money that is essentially an internet native currency, or let's call it like a global open source form of money. If that kind of stuff is important to you, I would encourage you to at least try to some degree, at least investigate and engage with Bitcoin as a form of money and to see how far you get. Because there's actually today a lot of opportunities to spend it. People might not be aware of it, but you can get, let's say a Satoshi goes a long way. A Satoshi is the smallest fraction of a Bitcoin, or like one Bitcoin cent.
Pick up on some of the questions I had at the beginning. Can you really use Bitcoin to buy everything you need, pay your rent, your municipal rates, your taxes, everything like that?
So, I mean, ultimately, so for me, when we talk about something like an asset and the value of an asset, to me, that value is largely determined by the market of goods and services that it's connected to, that you can use that asset to acquire those goods and services. And so fundamentally, the Bitcoin is connected globally to almost every single local fiat market So there's exchanges everywhere in the world, right? So ultimately, you can always convert your Bitcoin into local fiat, and then you can spend that. But the question is, how far can we get without that selling step, without that converting of Bitcoin into rands, for example? And there's like a massive amount of ways that you can spend it. So for example, what Money Badger has been doing is we've been expanding. Initially, we enabled Bitcoin payments for Pick and Pay. And there you can, I mean, not only buy groceries, but they've got a lot of value-added services and bulk payments and things like that that you can do. And we've subsequently expanded into online e-commerce with our Peach partnership. There's a lot of online shops where you can now spend your Bitcoin, and also integrating with these mobile payment operators like Zapper and Scan2Pay. So there's now so many places you can already spend Bitcoin, including, you know, filling up your car, buying electricity for the house, etc. And that number of places where you can spend directly is growing. Then there's always been service providers that have sold vouchers. You can buy your Willy's food with Bitcoin. You just buy a Willy's voucher, for example, electronics, etc. And then we can also go into sort of the circular economies that you spoke about, where people are actually onboarding shops in their local area. So this is places like Mossel Bay, like Bitcoin Ekasi, but also a lot of the Garden Route circular economies that's popped up recently, particularly Witsan and Plet. There's a lot of local shop owners where that local economy is being supported now by people accepting Bitcoin. So we can go into this, but the point is there's a lot of places where you can do so. I think the one place that's still a bit tricky is something like debit orders. So your insurance and healthcare and that kind of stuff maybe still a bit tricky, but we'll get there.
Yeah, I mean, I was down in the Garden Route some time ago, and you could go to Plettenberg Bay and some of these places, you know, George and so on, and you would see these we accept Bitcoin signs outside a lot of the stores there. So there's evidence of these circular economies growing. You can go to a restaurant, you can pay your meals for it. But the question I have arising from that, you know, a lot of the Bitcoin purists or the Bitcoin maxis, maximalists, if you want, they believe that, you know, Bitcoin is something that you should never sell. And so to start using it as a transactional currency, maybe for them is a little bit of a stretch. Are you finding that a bit of a barrier?
That is absolutely, that's probably the biggest barrier actually to people spending Bitcoin. And there's some, there's a couple of misconceptions there that I think needs to be addressed. There's things called Gresham's Law, where people talk about bad money and good money. And I think in a lot of cases, people try to apply these sort of older mental models to Bitcoin, and it doesn't always apply really well. So I think the first thing that when people say, you know, you shouldn't be spending your Bitcoin because it's going to go up in value forever, and therefore it makes sense to rather spend your rands. Well, I think what we're talking about today specifically is the case where people try to live off of Bitcoin entirely. So that means you're earning your salary in Bitcoin, and then that is what you have to spend. Right. So it's not like you are buying some Bitcoin today and then tomorrow you're spending that Bitcoin that you bought today. No, the idea is that you have, let's call it like a spending allocation, maybe a spending wallet to separate it out. You're not spending your savings. You're not spending your stack. Yes, that you put into long-term storage and you expect that the value of that to go up. But in the short term, well, if you're earning Bitcoin, you can either sell it for rands or you can spend it directly. And there's something to be said for that direct spending action where you're helping to build and drive this new initiative and helping to support these peer-to-peer circular economy shops when you're driving through Plet in December and January. I think there's something to be said for the power that you have in deciding how you actually engage in commerce with goods and services providers. And when you spend Bitcoin, it's almost like a form of, on some level, there's some form of activism, I would say, supporting freedom of choice and your right to hold your own and store your own value.
Yeah, we did an exercise at MoneyWeb some time ago, probably about a year or 9 months ago, where we looked at if you took the average South African salary and you saved 10% of that. So the average South African salary at that time was about 28,000 Rand. You take 10% of that every month and you save that and put that into Bitcoin. And the question was, can you become a millionaire on an average South African salary? And of course, the answer is yes, because the power of compounding will eventually work in your favor. But the very interesting thing about the exercise was how quickly you would do that if you saved in Bitcoin as opposed to rands. In rands, you know, you'd be able to invest in the stock market, you'd be able to invest in interest-bearing accounts. But with Bitcoin, you're relying on the upward thrust of the Bitcoin price itself. So I forget the exact number of years, but it was 5 or 6 years, you would be a rand millionaire. It's a very interesting thing to start looking at. I guess one of the tough questions that comes out of that is, what about taxes? If you are using Bitcoin as a transactional currency, when we keep on hearing that the tax man is after crypto profits, is that true? And then what happens when you spend Bitcoin? Is it taxed as income or capital? How do you approach this?
Yeah, so that definitely is one of the other big things that make people hesitate to consider spending Bitcoin, because there is some level of reporting that you need to do, obviously. Now, let me just preface this. Obviously, everybody says this, but disclaimer, I'm not a tax professional. I'm not a tax advisor, and so I can't offer tax advice. What I can share is sort of my view and opinion based on my understanding. But ultimately, if you are giving your Bitcoin to someone else, whether that is to buy something or to give it to a market and exchanging it for fiat, or even exchanging it for another form of crypto, SAR says that is a disposal of the asset. And at that point in time, you're supposed to calculate whether you've made a gain or a loss, and then include that calculation in your annual tax return or provisional tax return, if that applies. So, okay, so yes, okay, there's some consideration. I can maybe talk about how I approach it to alleviate a lot of the concern.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think something there, again, when we can make the distinction between savings and spending. So in other words, if we've got separate accounts, a wallet for saving and a wallet for spending. To my mind, when SARS wants us to report on their stuff, they typically say, well, we look at assets first in and then compare that to assets first out. If we can break it up by account such that your savings calculations is done separately from your spending calculations, then it does greatly simplify things. So for example, on a monthly basis, let's say that you earn your Bitcoin at the start of the month or on the 25th of the previous month, but let's say normally at the start of the month, and then you're spending from that balance during the month. Well, the change in prices on the amount that you're spending is actually relatively little. So we have this thing called volatility, which is the price of Bitcoin going up and down relative to the rand. And over a long period of time, what we've seen is that is a very big difference. It changes a lot over time. But on the shorter term basis, like on a month or a week, the changes are less significant. And so what ends up happening is that if you do this every month, you earn your Bitcoin, you save a portion of it, and you spend the rest, then in a situation where the net movement of that Bitcoin that you're spending, most likely it sits underneath your capital gain exclusion for the year. And so you should still be calculating it. And there are so many software options out there. There's software services that they connect to your wallet. They can help you track your transactions and then you make a calculation. But I think what most people will find, I'm certainly finding this, is that if I'm following this sort of method where I'm earning into my spending wallet, I'm saving a portion, and then I'm spending the rest, that the change in prices is less than that 40,000 rand annual capital gain exclusion, so that I don't actually end up paying additional tax on my Bitcoin spending.
It's interesting. You and I were speaking a little time ago at a presentation at Gibbs, the Gordon Institute of Business Science. And one of the things that came up was, you know, once you're on the crypto rails, in other words, you have exited the fiat system, and you own a stable coin, it could be a rand stable coin, a dollar stable coin, it could be Bitcoin or anything, that there are suppliers in China who will accept rand stable coin. And it puzzled me why this would be the case. Why would the rand be of, you know, attractive to these suppliers in China? And it turns out the reason for that is because once you're on the crypto rails, you can very easily switch to at low cost to a US dollar stable coin, or you can switch to Bitcoin and so on. And if we switch back to Bitcoin, it makes sense that if you're earning Bitcoin and you have to save. I mean, this is clearly part of the whole strategy that anybody who's going Bitcoin only, you got to save. You can't be earning Bitcoin and spending it all, because that would probably defeat the purpose. Is that your kind of philosophy, that part of what you're earning, you're saving, and you don't intend to touch that?
Exactly. So that also ties into the critique that we receive, or that I receive, in that people say, well, if you're encouraging people to spend Bitcoin, then they'll be saving less because they'll be, you know, getting rid of Bitcoin they could have been saving. And then I tell them it's actually the opposite. What we found in practice is that people who spend Bitcoin or earn Bitcoin, they end up saving more, because it's no longer this mental calculation of, oh, okay, you know what, I want to allocate 5% of my savings in a month to Bitcoin, and then having to go and purchase the Bitcoin and keep track of that. It's the opposite. You end up starting off with more Bitcoin, and so you end up saving more as well. I think the same kind of applies for the wallets, in that if you can spend something. So a wallet's biggest problem is convincing people to fund their wallet. Why would I fund my wallet if the funds in that wallet is less useful than if it was in a different wallet or like in a bank account? Well, if we can spend it, those funds, then that distinction becomes less and less, and people are more likely to fund their wallets. So the net effect is that if you're spending Bitcoin, you probably want more of it anyway, and you don't get trapped in that Gresham's law dilemma of bad money moving out good money out of the system, because you can say, well, you know, if you believe Bitcoin is good money, it's so easy to get it, that why do you even still have bad money?
Right. Now, okay, tell us a little bit about yourself, Carl. You've got an interesting story. I mentioned in the beginning, you are one of the founders of Luno, but I think you exited quite early on, and then you've been in a number of different crypto projects along the way. Tell us how you got to the Money Badger.
No, the whole story. Well, long, long, long story short, I was out of university. Out of university, I decided, instead of going to look for a job, I want to try my hand at this entrepreneur thing, try to build something new. And I got together with a couple of friends, and we built this game, a social mobile game on Mixit, when Mixit was still a very big network. And we rapidly found that monetization on these platforms were very tricky, because they didn't have strong on and off ramps into the local ecosystem. So I know today, I think there's a lot of games with massive, I read something about Counter-Strike skins and accessories in Counter-Strike, and that being like a multi-billion dollar economy now. So I know these days it's easier to sort of drive these in-game economies, but at the time we were frustrated because we couldn't, there was no way to fund it, not with network operator premium SMSs, not with card. And so I've always had this problem of sort of, how do we get into a situation where if you want to publish something on the internet, you can easily monetize it? Now, since then, we've come a long way, and there's a lot of different options, but it always seemed to me that this neutral rail, or this neutral global rail of Bitcoin, is a good solution. So I started getting excited about it when I first read the white paper about 2010, and I was just trying to promote the use of Bitcoin, adoption of Bitcoin, as far as I could. And I had an opportunity with a number of companies to start some Bitcoin projects. Like, for example, we built the first Bitcoin wallet for a bank in South Africa. I don't know if I should name the bank, but even back in 2013, we had a bank with a fully working Bitcoin wallet. You could buy, sell, store, send, receive. After that, we pivoted to a business-to-consumer model. We said, let's build an exchange. So that was BitX, turned into Luno. And I've always felt that the last missing step was that sort of Bitcoin as money step, instead of just Bitcoin as savings. So that's where Money Badger fits into this whole thing, is we're saying, well, we are now building a network. And I know this sounds crazy, but we're trying to build a network as an, let's say, like normally being able to compete with the likes of Visa and MasterCard. So Visa and MasterCard, they've got their card network, and we are building the crypto payments network. And it's early days. It's easy to laugh at a small project when it's early days, but we seem to be getting some good traction and growth. And that's the goal, ultimately, is to build this alternative rail, but that's built on, in my mind, a superior technology.
Right. And Money Badger at this point, I mean, it was announced a couple of years ago that Pick and Pay, I think they started off the as a pilot where you could spend your Bitcoin. Now it's rolled out across all of its 1,000-plus stores across the country, right? Are there other retail chains as well that have signed up with Money Badger?
So Pick and Pay is an interesting one. That project actually started long ago in 2017. And they're to date the only major retailer that we have onboarded directly. So subsequently, what we've done is we've partnered with major payment service providers so that we can serve their customers as just part of their normal offering. So there's no new commercials or contracts or anything related to that that's necessary. But should the customer opt in, depending on the scheme, if it's an opt-in scheme or opt-out scheme, they immediately have the ability to accept Bitcoin. And then what happens is that you've got this sort of group. I know, again, it's a small group, but it's growing. This group of consumers or class of consumer that's saying, well, I want to spend my Bitcoin because I'm earning it. So firstly, I want to earn and save in Bitcoin. And then naturally, I also want to spend it. And they will seek out stores that will accept it. And so, like I've mentioned, we've got major brands that now, via their existing PSPs, can accept Bitcoin. Like, for example, you can fill up your tank at Engine or Shell. If you're buying, going to the pharmacy, clicks in the scheme, accept it via Zapper, for example, or Scan2Pay. So we've got now all of these big brands on board via their PSPs. But to answer your question, Pick and Pay is the only retailer that we've onboarded directly. But we are working with some of the other big retailers to do direct integrations with them as well.
What an interesting story. And I guess the message is don't be afraid to spend your Bitcoin, but continue to save. And a few good tips there, like separating out your spending and your saving wallets, but do make sure that you save. I want to thank you very much. That was Carl van Wyk, who is the founder of Money Badger.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.